Amen. Yeah, today we're sort of coming towards the end of our series on the second coming of Jesus. Today we'll be covering a lot of stuff today, and some of it you'll probably know. I'm going to go through a little bit of a timeline of things that have been prophesied and talk about some of the things that have happened and those that haven't. And some of this is a little bit negative, what's happening. But next week we might focus actually on what God is doing and what he's building and the positive things, because there's a lot of awesome things going on around the world. But so let's just read Matthew chapter 24, verses 1 to 37. We've been touched on different parts of this through our series, but this was Jesus left the temple, this is from verse 1, and was walking away when the disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." Now, just as I'm going through this, I just want you to sort of make a little bit of a mental note of some of the things that this is Jesus speaking about, what it's going to be like as the whole earth moves towards, and all of history moves towards this time, towards the second coming. So we're going to look at, so just sort of, you might like to just sort of mentally think, oh yeah, this one, that one, and we'll just see if we can cover them. As Jesus was sitting, this is verse 3, on the Mount of Olives. Actually a very significant place, the Mount of Olives, with all the different things that happened there and so on. The disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you're not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation spoken of through the prophet Daniel," see here Jesus is referring back to Daniel, and this is where our series all began, isn't it, with the prophet Daniel and the things that he prophesied, and Jesus is agreeing and giving his stamp of his seal of approval to Daniel as a prophet and what he said. When you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath. For there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. This is a great tribulation time. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive, but for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, there he is out in the desert, do not go out. Or here he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. This is Jesus' second coming. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. And that's an interesting little thing, but it's obvious in the desert because of the vultures, what's going on. That's what Jesus is saying. It's going to be obvious when his return is. And immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. I think that's a reference to the fact that the generation that sees all the things that Jesus is talking about will not pass away. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Pretty powerful little passage from the Bible, that, isn't it? And it covers a lot of stuff, and it was interesting that Jesus wanted his disciples to know some of this stuff. First of all, will we know exactly when Jesus will return? Now, it's very clear that we won't. But I think we need to establish, first of all, it's very clear that he will return. You know, Jesus talked about this often. All the prophets and Paul and the other writers in the New Testament, they pointed to the fact that Jesus was not only coming once, but he was going to come back again. But it's very clear from verse 36 that no one knows the day or the hour. No one knows about that day or the hour. So if someone tells you, and over the years different people and groups have made set dates and times and all the rest of it, but you know, the Bible's very clear, no one's going to know. But can we learn from the fig tree? But what can we learn from the fig tree and its leaves coming out in regards to when Jesus will return? What do you think Jesus was hinting at there? What's that? Yeah, there's going to be signs, there's going to be evidence. And it's a little bit like, you know, the seasons. You know, when you see the fig tree starting to, you know it's spring and that summer's coming. That's what Jesus was talking about. You won't know the day or the hour. No one will know exactly when he will return, but we can have a good sense that of the season. And there's a big difference, isn't there, that between what Jesus was saying there. We should be aware, in fact, of the season. It's interesting, in Daniel chapter 9, verse 24, Daniel actually prophesied to the day when Jesus would be revealed. And there's 480 years, 7 times 70. It's really, really a study all on its own, how Daniel prophesied, and the Jews should have known that Jesus was the Messiah, because they knew all this stuff, and it was actually prophesied to the day from the time that Cyrus made the command to rebuild the temple. 483 years, I think, is what Daniel spelled out, and yet they missed it. And it's also the same for us. You know, even though Jesus has laid this all out, he said, we're not going to know the day or the hour, but we should be aware of the season. So let's not be like the Pharisees and the Jews who had such specific information and yet missed it, but we need to just be aware. So today we're just going to do a little bit of a simple timeline of some of the events. We're not going to cover absolutely everything, but particularly the ones that were covered in Matthew 24 here and a few others as well. So in Matthew 24 verses 1 to 2, the first thing look at it in this timeline. When Jesus and his disciples were leaving the temple and the disciples were commenting about the beautiful building, Jesus replied, not one stone here will be left on another. So the very first thing, that number one that Jesus predicted before he returns again, is that the temple would be destroyed. And that actually happened in AD 70, about 40 years after Jesus predicted. There they were looking at it. They'd just been to worship God in the temple and saying how beautiful it all was. But it was just 40 years later when the Romans came through and they totally destroyed the Jerusalem and the temple. And they actually pulled every stone apart because there was gold and treasures and all sorts of stuff that had been inlaid into the temple, and so they destroyed the whole thing completely. All that was left was the foundation area, and that's the Weeping Wall. It's still there today in Jerusalem. It's the base of where the temple used to be. So that prophecy came true, so we can tick that one off. Secondly, many deceivers and false Christs will come. Has that happened? There's a lot of confusion, isn't there, with all the different denominations and religions and cults and all the rest of it in the world today. And it seems to be not getting less but getting more. Now, there's always some new group starting up and claiming to have the answer or to be the only one. What we need to be aware of is any group that claims to be the one and only way, that they're ones to be wary of. So many false Christs have come. I think we'd agree with that. Jesus predicted that. We can tick that one off. Happy with that? Thirdly, Jesus said there would be wars and rumors of wars. Well, have there been wars and rumors of wars throughout history? I mean, I think there's barely been a time since Jesus spoke that when there hasn't been a war going on somewhere in the world. And there's many, many areas of conflict going on today. That has happened and continues to happen. Fourthly, Jesus predicted that there would be famines. Have there been famines? Sadly, there's been famines. Too many famines. Droughts and floods and famines and all sorts of tragedies. Fifthly, what else did Jesus predict in verse 7 of Matthew 24? He predicted that there would be earthquakes. That they'd be increasing. Anybody heard about any earthquakes lately? They do seem to be increasing, don't they? And there's snow down the South Island as well. Yes, you're right. It's just that whole part of the turmoil and the climate and the... Sixthly, in verse 9, there'll be persecution and martyrdom of Christians. Has that happened? Sadly, it has. Do you know that with the exception of John, none of the disciples, the 12 disciples of Jesus, lived into their old age? They were all martyred one way or another. They were all killed for their faith. Many around the world have been throughout history and still are today. I mean, we hear about it in the news with what's happening in the Middle East and these Christian groups and so on. Just the other day in America, that guy went in and shot a couple of pastors and, what, nine people or something in that church. So it's persecution and martyrdom of Christians. Was Jesus correct when he prophesied that? Sadly, he was. You can tick that one off. Seventh, verse 10 tells us that many will turn away from their faith in Jesus. I think we need to realize, too, that there's also, I see this is a little bit the negative side, but Jesus is building his church. And around the world, there's some awesome things happening. We might look at some of that next week. But in, I guess in general Western culture, and particularly in the traditional Christian areas of the world, you know, there has been a decline. And we need to acknowledge that, yes, Jesus was true, was correct about that one. Sadly. Number 8. Verse 11, Jesus told us that many false prophets will deceive many people. There's always some dramatic thing going on, even in the Christian world. And I just want to put a little warning out there. You know, sometimes we can be so rushing after the latest fad or the latest thing that seems to be happening. We just need to be a little bit careful. Because Jesus predicted that many false prophets would arise, particularly in the last days, and deceive people. That has happened, and it continues to happen. Let's not be sucked in by some of the dramatic things that might be going on. Just check that they really are God and the Spirit of God, and that it's got a good foundation. Ninthly, Luke, this is a different section of the Bible, Luke chapter 17. Actually, there's Matthew 24, Luke 17, and Luke 21, and Mark 13, I think, where they're all, the Gospels are telling the same story from a different perspective. So they're all parallels of the same. So Luke 17, verses 26 to 29. Tells us that the last days will be like the days of Noah and Lot. And actually in Matthew 24 it said about there'll be an increase of wickedness. And if you think about the days of Noah and Lot, why did God destroy the earth with the flood? Why did he destroy Sodom and Gomorrah? Because of the immorality and the wickedness and the violence and all the demonic stuff that was going on. It just got too much and God had to bring a change. And so there's going to be immorality and violence and wickedness will increase, Jesus said, as time goes on. Can we tick that one? Sadly, I think we can. I think our grandparents would be absolutely amazed at some of the things that are accepted today in our society, in our culture. They wouldn't believe it. If they, our great-grandparents, if they came back and saw what's going on. Be like in the days of Noah and of Lot. Sadly, we can tick that one. Luke 21, verse 25, talks about the roaring and tossing of the sea. Even the ocean is going to be affected as time goes on. Is that happened or happening? I don't know about you guys, but growing up, I'd never actually heard of a tsunami. We did hear about them a little bit, but I'd never, ever seen the evidence of anything like that happening. And yet, in recent years, there's been several huge tsunamis, hasn't there? The Boxing Day tsunami. There's the one where a local lady, Mary Ann White, was drowned. Was that in Samoa or somewhere? She was killed in that tsunami. Local lady here from Raglan, the huge one in Japan. I mean, Jesus was pretty right on, wasn't he, with his predictions. Roaring and tossing of the sea. Number 11, Luke 21, the second part of verse 24. Jesus said, Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now, this is a really interesting one because Jesus is outlaying the limits to the time before he comes back. And we need to be aware of this, that during the 1948, Israel was declared a nation again after almost 2,000 years, one of the most unlikely things to ever happen, and it happened after the Second World War. But immediately, of course, all the Arab neighbors decided they didn't want Israel to exist, and so they attacked them. But it was during that war that West Jerusalem was captured by Israel, and they actually expanded their areas. And for the first time in almost 2,000 years, Jerusalem, half of Jerusalem, was under Israel's control again. And Israel was a nation, actually existed in 1948. But it wasn't until the Six-Day War in 1967 that once again Israel was attacked, and then they counterattacked, and they took over a bigger area again, the whole of the West Bank, and they also took over the eastern part of Jerusalem, which had been held by Jordan up until that time. And so that prophecy that Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles, and there'd been many, many nations in the last 2,000 years that had literally trampled on Jerusalem until 1948, and particularly in 1967. So that prophecy has come true, actually, in very recent times. This is a major sign that we need to be aware of. And Israel, the fig tree, has sprouted. It's actually interesting that there's an analogy between Israel and the fig tree. That was their understanding, that there's some symbolism there. Zechariah chapter 12, verse 3, the prophet Zechariah says that Jerusalem will be an immovable rock for all the nations. All who try to move her will injure themselves. And time and time and time again, we're seeing this area being contested. And people are coming up with ideas of how to divide the city up again and give the Muslims some and so on and so forth. And there's all these sort of ideas for peace plans and so on. But we just need to be aware that anyone who tries to change what God has set in place with Jerusalem will injure themselves. They'll hit their foot against a rock as they try to do that. Even against all odds, Jerusalem will remain until the end of time, and end of part one, when Jesus returns. We need to be aware of that. It doesn't matter what you hear, what people say, what everyone thinks is going on, it will be immovable. Jesus prophesied that. Number 12, in Joel chapter 2, verse 31 in Acts, Peter was quoting from Joel 2 in Acts 2, and it talks about the fact that the sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood. There's been a few eclipses and some blood moons in recent months. And I haven't studied the blood moons and what that's all about when the moon turns to a red color. But apparently there's a lot of significance about that. My personal opinion is that this is just the beginning. And this is not exactly what Jesus was talking about in the fullness of it, but it's the beginning. The blood moon's happening. It's quite interesting. A red moon. I think there's more to come there. Number 13, if we go back to Matthew 24, in verse 14, Jesus said, "The gospel will be preached to all nations, and then the end will come." Now, there are still some unreached people, and some unreached people groups out there. I think the job is pretty much done, but there's probably more to do. And we've even got unreached people living in our own community. And I think we need to keep telling people. We need to be supporting those that are telling people. And we need to be continuing to get the good news out right through to the finish. So I'm not sure if we can give these last two a big tick. We can probably give them a little tick or a question mark, whether they've the blood moon and whether the gospel has gone out to everybody or not. I think pretty much it has, but it's probably still a little bit to go. Number 14, Daniel chapter 7, verse 24, and Revelation 13 and 17 talks about the 10 kingdoms, the 10 kings of the last kingdom, and the leader that will arise to rule over that kingdom. It will end up ruling the whole world, who has not appeared yet. And who is that? The Antichrist or the beast. So Jesus prophesied that this man would come. Daniel prophesied it. It's mentioned in Revelation as well, the Apostle John. This 10-nation empire, a revived Roman Empire, which, remember that statue of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and the iron legs, and then it goes into the toes, where it's clay and iron mixed together. That's where this originally came from. Bible commentators, when I was younger, always thought that this referred to the European Union, a revived European, Roman Empire. There's actually some Bible commentators today that think it could include or be predominantly the Arab states. So that's just a bit of an interesting shift in people's thinking because of what's happening today. I think the thing we need to understand is that, we need to be keeping an eye on what's happening in the Middle East. If we really want to know what sort of time we're living in, look, keep an eye on Israel, keep an eye on what's happening in the surrounding nations. And it really is rapidly changing. I mean, we've got ISIS. We've got, we've got the Shiite Muslims. We've got the Kurds. It's interesting. ISIS, I've never really fully understood why the Muslims are all fighting each other, but apparently ISIS is predominantly Sunni Muslim. It's a branch of Islam, which is subtly supported by Turkey and Saudi Arabia. And that's why all these people are going around the world, and they're going to Turkey, and then they go down through, because Turkey just allows them to go down through the border, because they're actually the same religious stream as Turkey, and they're allowing them to go through. And then when they get injured themselves, they come back and they're getting treated in Turkey. So there's a subtle support going on there, and apparently Saudi Arabia are backing it as well, because they're also Sunni Muslim. But it's interesting, it's opposed by Iran because they're Shiite Muslim. And so that we've got this strange thing happening where the Americans and the Iranians are actually almost working together against ISIS. So there's some really strange stuff going on in the Middle East. We also need to realize that in Iraq and Syria, there's a mixture of both. And that's why that area is such an area of conflict at the moment. Then, of course, you've got the Kurds. And they're another whole group again. And they're not Arab. They're a different culture completely. They speak a different language. But they're also Sunni Muslim. So they're predominantly a Muslim. But there are some Christians amongst them, and they're a more secular group than the others. So it's really interesting to see what's going on with the Kurds right now. They're not Arabs. And I just learned a little bit of stuff yesterday about them. I'll just... I can find it here. Apparently, the Kurds are the biggest people group in the world without their own nation. They're numbering some 30 million people. The Kurds are one of the world's largest ethnic groups without a state of their own, scattered since antiquity, since before the time of Jesus. They've been there all thousands and thousands of years. In the mountainous lands straddling today's Turkey, Syria, Iran, and Iraq. Their language, Kurdish, is part of the Indo-European family of languages, close to Persian but unrelated to Arabic. There's this other interesting little thing that they've just had some real gains militarily, the Kurds, and politically in Turkey. They're really making some progress right now. And the Kurdistan government in northern Iraq, this is right now, the Kurds maintain their own armed forces known as the Peshmerga, which literally means those who confront death. No Iraqi troops are allowed in the Kurdish region, which controls its own borders. And this is the interesting thing. Westerners, that's us, can fly into the region's capital, Erbil, without a visa. right now, we could just cruise along there and be right in the middle of this Kurdistan area. And man, they need some missionaries over there at the moment, don't they? And we could just sail right in there. And Kurdish is used everywhere as the official language, and few young Iraqi Kurds can speak Arabic. They have a big, giant green, white, and red Kurdish banner. So if you're over there, just look out for that, and you know which side you're on. The interesting thing is that Islam is rising right around the world and getting more and more aggressive, isn't it? And if you think about the terrorism that's happening in the world, if you take, and I don't know the whole lot, I don't know any more than you guys, I just listen to the news, and I've picked up that there's ISIS, that's the Sunni guys, they're doing all the damage at the moment. There's Boko Haram, the guys that in Nigeria that captured all those schoolgirls and terrorizing parts of Africa right now. They're Muslim. Then there's Al-Qaeda, and we know that in Afghanistan, the Americans have been trying to deal with them for years, and they've been struggling to sort them out. And there's Hezbollah, the ones that the Israelis are up against. And there's probably other groups as well. You know, there's all these terrorist groups that are coming, and they're carrying the spirit of Islam, this militant religion that they're a part of. Just a question to think about. Do Muslims worship the same God as we do? Some people think they do. See Robert shaking his head there. They do believe in the first five books of the Old Testament, laws of Moses, but they also believe in the Quran. The other thing, I think we should sometimes ask ourselves, who is Allah that they worship? Is he the true God? Is he a false God? Some people actually believe that he's the devil himself. Ultimately, he will be revealed as Satan. I don't know. I'm not making any statements about that. But it's interesting that Islam is rising very strongly, very militantly in these last days. And we need to be aware of what's going on. Matthew 7, verse 16, Jesus told us that by their fruits you will know them. Just look around and see what's going on, and then you'll see whether something is from God or not by the fruits and by the outcome of what's happening. Whatever our conclusion about Islam or Allah and the Muslims, there's one thing that I can guarantee for sure is that Muslims need reaching with the good news of Jesus, probably as much or more than anybody else today. The other interesting thing, I was talking to a guy the other day at Farmlands, and he told me that, and he's a Christian guy, that right now there are, and it's increasing all the time, there are over 3,000 Muslims living in Hamilton. And a few years ago, there was only a couple of hundred. And so, you know, right around the world, this Muslim religion and the spirit of Islam is rising. And there's people, even in our own nation, in our own, I don't know about Raglan, but in our own area, that we can relate to and hopefully reach with the good news of Jesus. We're living in a day we don't actually necessarily have to go overseas to be a missionary. All the people that God's bringing even into Raglan every day, all the tourists from all around the world. And, you know, we've got a challenge, haven't we, to start reaching out to some of these people. Number 15. The Antichrist will initially bring peace to Israel. Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, Daniel prophesied a peace treaty that would last for 7 years. A seven-year peace treaty. Actually, it won't last for 7 years, but there's a peace treaty coming. And if we hear of a peace treaty in Israel, we need to get a few pennies dropping and saying, okay, well, maybe Daniel and Jesus and these other prophets are reminding us that something's brewing here. 16, the next point is that Matthew 24, verse 15, Jesus said, when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of the prophet Daniel, here Daniel is referring to Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, we need to realize that this treaty is going to be broken. So we have a treaty, and after 3.5 years, it's going to be broken. In the middle of the 7-year period of peace, and here Jesus was referring to Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. The Antichrist is going to end the treaty and will put an end to sacrifice, and on a wing of the temple set himself up to be worshipped as God. And that is the tipping point. That's the moment when God says, enough is enough is enough. Because, you know, all through history, people have been thumbing their noses at God and Jesus and Christianity and the Jews, God's people. And there's been rebellion. It's just in our nature to be rebellious. And God's put up with it, and he's put up with it, and he's put up with it. And he's allowed, by his grace, for things to continue down through the generations for thousands and thousands of years. But the moment that this guy sets himself up as God in the temple, God says, that's enough. And the great tribulation begins. That's when God begins to pour out his wrath on this earth like we've never ever seen before. It's going to be a terrible, terrible time, and we don't want to be here. I can tell you that now. But there's a couple of little interesting things that we can think about. First of all, if the Antichrist stops the daily sacrifice, it means it must have been reinstated. Did you get that? Because from the time that the temple was destroyed, there's been no sacrifices in Jerusalem. And right now, Israel, they control Jerusalem, and the temple base is there, but there's no temple in existence right now. There's no sacrifices right now. And there's a Muslim mosque on the site where the temple should be. But we can get a clue from this, from what Jesus said and from what Daniel prophesied, that things are going to begin again. And if this Antichrist, this beast, sets himself up to be worshipped as God in the temple, there must be a new temple that will be built. And we could be living in the times where we see that happen fairly soon. Something else to think about and to be aware of. If we see that there's a new temple being built and the sacrifices, they're getting ready to reinstate that, I don't think that will happen until this treaty begins, this peace treaty. And then the sacrifices will begin. The Jews will think everything's sweet, everything's lovely, everything will be at peace. But it will only last for 3.5 years, because then the Antichrist will break the treaty. That's what's prophesied in here. So that's interesting, I think, to think about that. Something we can be aware of if we see it in the news, that someone started to build a temple. It's going to be a bit of tension, because there's the Muslim mosque on the Dome of the Rock on that same site. It's going to be an interesting situation. There's another mystery, number 17, and that's Babylon. Because the Revelation 17 and 18 talks about the fact that Babylon is going to be destroyed, and it's prophesied also in Isaiah and Jeremiah, it's going to be destroyed in an hour, in a week, in no time at all. It's just going to be a total destruction. And right now, Babylon really does not exist as a city. Remember in the time of Darius the Mede, when he came in the city, we learned all about that. We were learning about Daniel and how they came in and they took over. And ever since, there's been a decline in Babylon until it really doesn't exist anymore. There's ruins there. Saddam Hussein tried to rebuild it, but he only got part way. We could go there today and we could see the ruins of Babylon. And there's a few people sort of live in little villages in what used to be part of it, because it was covered a 200 square mile area. But really, the city of Babylon does not exist today. But it's in Revelation. It's in prophecy. Does that mean that Babylon will literally be a city again? Or is it the spirit of Babylon, the worldliness, that will be destroyed? I don't know the answer to that. Another interesting one, if we see that there's a rebuilding of the city of Babylon, but it may not actually be referring to that, because the book of Revelation is quite, there's quite a lot of symbolism and picture stuff in there that could, it could have a spiritual meaning rather than a literal one. But let's keep our eyes open, watch that space. The other interesting thing is that Saudi Arabia and the Arab Gulf states, if you think about that area of the world with all the oil wealth, you know, you think of United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Dubai, Kuwait, all those nations, along with Saudi Arabia, they actually control a big chunk of the world's wealth today. Whereas back in, you know, a couple hundred years ago even, they were just riding around on their camels in the desert and really owning nothing and doing nothing because they were nothing. But now they are very, very significant players in the world economy. It could be that spirit that's going to be destroyed that was prophesied in Revelation. Recently, our own Prime Minister visited Saudi Arabia seeking a trade deal. Did you hear about that in the news? It's interesting, isn't it? All the leaders of the world, you know, Obama and Michelle over there, you know, and then while they're there, the women probably wear their burqas, and because it's the prayer times, because they're wanting to be polite and PC, they probably bow down to Allah. You know, people from a supposedly Christian nations, and that's what it's talking about in here. It's talking about that adultery, that spiritual adultery that happens with Babylon. And I think this whole thing, it could be a part of it, but I'll leave that to you guys to think about. Babylon, the harlot. It's just an interesting one. It's a bit of a puzzle, because it's mentioned so much in the Bible, and yet literally it's not there right now. Number 18, Revelation 13, verses 16 to 18, speaks about the mark of the beast and 666. I talked about this a few weeks ago. The Antichrist will control the world by controlling the money. It's not going to be so much with guns and all that sort of thing. He's going to control the whole world through finance. And if we, no one will be able to buy or sell without a mark on the hand or the forehead. That's prophesied in, there in Revelation 13, verse 16. And when that was prophesied and written, I mean, it wasn't that practical. But now with, I mean, we don't, computer chips and all the rest of it, I mean, it would be so easy for something like that to happen. If we're still here, there's a warning in Revelation 14, 15, 16, 19, and 20. Five times we're warned, do not get the mark. It doesn't matter whether you cannot buy anything or whether your family's going to die, do not get the mark. That's what the Bible warns us over five times. Do not get that mark. Instead, we need to count off the days, because we know there's only going to be 3.5 years until the end of that time. 1,277 days, and Jesus will return. Once we get to that point, we will know the day, if we're here. So don't get the mark. And of course, 666 is the mystery of all of that, and it's related to worship of the Antichrist and the beast. And it's, of course, 666 is man's number three times. It's just going to be all about man's system and greed and money and control. Oh, that's all I know, but just don't get the mark. Number 19, Matthew 24, and verses 29 towards the end, Jesus said, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. It's also mentioned in Revelation 6. The whole universe will be in upheaval towards the end of time. And I don't think the politicians will be able to blame global warming for that one, because it'll be nothing to do with CO2 or anything else. It will be, the whole universe is going to be shaken. And stars will fall from the sky. It will appear like they are. Number 20, Luke 21, verse 20 says, Jesus said that Jerusalem will be surrounded by armies. Right at the end, it's like all the armies of the world are going to, and you can sort of imagine that. they're going to be all gathered there, ready to fight. Number 21. At that point, before they destroy everything in the whole world, guess what happens? Jesus returns. That will be what is known as the great and dreadful day of the Lord. It'll be great for those that are ready and dreadful for those that are not. Matthew 24, verse 30 says, "At that time the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky with power and great glory." Luke 17, verse 24, and also in Matthew 24, it says, "It will be like lightning which flashes and lights up the sky, right across everywhere." Revelation 1, verse 7 says, "Every eye shall see him." Zechariah 14, verse 4 says, "On that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives in East Jerusalem." That's the very place that Jesus ascended into heaven from. It's the very place in the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus had sweated drops of blood before the crucifixion. Such a significant place. That's where Jesus left from. That's where he's returning to. And there will be such a great earthquake at that time that the Mount of Olives will be split in two, to the east and the west, and there'll be a great big chasm right down the middle that God's people will be able to escape through. How do you feel about all of this? Well, I find it a little bit scary and depressing. Pleased you're excited, Deli. It's good that Jesus is coming back. It's good that God's got everything under control. And there's a good ending. You know, I think God wants us to have a vision to live for and to hope for and to go for, that it's going to, you know, the best is yet to come. We need to be confident of that. The other things we need to remember is that in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 9, and we talked about this and we talked about that whole concept of being caught up with the rapture, that Paul tells us that God did not appoint us to suffer wrath, but to receive salvation. It's not God's plan for his bride, the church, to go through the tribulation. I don't believe that. But there's different opinions about that. The question is, are we ready, like the parables that we've been looking at over the last few weeks that Jesus told? Are we like the bridesmaids? Are we like the wise ones or the foolish ones? Have we got the oil in our lamps? Have we got the Holy Spirit flowing through us and invigorating us? Or are we letting things run a bit dry in our faith? The parable of the talents that Jesus told. Are we being responsible with what God has entrusted to us? More important than ever in these last days to be growing and developing our giftings and sowing it back into God's kingdom for his cause in these days that we live in. It's critical that we handle ourselves well, that we're filled with the Holy Spirit, that we're growing our businesses for God's glory, not ours. That's what that's about. The next one, the sheep and the goats. Remember, be kind and generous and remember to help people in need, those that are sick, those that are poor, those that in prison, those that need a friend. Are we being the change? How's that going? Because you know, all the way through all this sort of tragic, negative, horrible stuff that Jesus prophesied, there's something really, really awesome that's going on. And I want to talk about that next week because we haven't got time today. But we can be a part of the change. And then fourthly, the great banquet that Jesus talked about, and how we need to bring people in. We need to be inviting people into God's house. We need to be encouraging people to come into God's family. We need to be inviting people to church to share his love and goodness with them. Let's see people saved and set free and blessed. No spare seats, no empty places at the banquet, no regrets. If we get so busy about our own stuff and we get there and, oh, I should have invited a few more. It'll be too late. We can do it now. let's be serious about getting people in. And if we're ready, my hope and my belief is that if we put it, our things up there, numbers 1 to 14 will apply to us. Can we put up the whole 1 to 14? Computer's not obliging. That's all right. Guys have done an awesome job back there. It hasn't been easy today. And from number 14 onwards, I believe they're not for us, actually. Because we won't be here. Luke says it like this in Luke 21, verse 28. When these things begin to take place, stand up. How about if we stand up? He also says, lift up your heads. Don't be downcast. Don't be despaired. Don't be worried. Don't be fearful. We need to be confident. We need to be excited because our redemption is drawing near. That's what the Word of God says, and the best is yet to come. Bless you guys.